Okay. We have, I guess, about 20 minutes between. We're 20 minutes away from and in between all these folks and a beer at the cocktail reception. So, Nance, thanks so much for that. This is great. Wanted to introduce our panel again. June runs analyst and industry consulting and industry analyst relations at BT. Nikki Hall, VP of Marketing and AR for Polycom. Diana Wong, in communications and HP in the software business. And Eric Rocco runs the IT services and invest research teams at Gartner. So thanks, you guys, for taking time out of your busy schedules to do the panel. Our topic is, and we set this up a little bit, is all around leveraging the analysts as coaches. Is this myth or reality? And we've had, all of us have different experiences with this, and we're going to poke into this a little bit, both on the AR and the research side. And I'm going to start this off, June, with a question with you. You know, you've told a great story about how you've utilized analysts, you know, to align with the executives. Mm-hmm. And love to hear your thoughts on your story about how that went and how important that's become to BT.
Sure. As we all know, we have great relationships at Gartner, but what we've done over the past 24 months that I'm really proud of is we've been really strategic in how we align to Gartner. And what Peter talked about and what Gene talked about is taking that deep understanding, the vertical expertise, the sales expertise, and aligning it within our business. And we started with our CEO and his leadership team, and we mapped some coaches to them individually. Then we went into our regions, we went around the globe, we went into the verticals, and we really found outstanding coaches that were able to provide insight at a different level, and that really changed the way everyone within BT looked at Gartner, more as a trusted partner, and the coaching situation one-on-one was outstanding. And what it did, it not only changed the way they looked at Gartner, but it changed the way they looked at the role for AR professionals and looking at the way we're adding value at every part of the business and taking the outside intelligence and bringing it in. And now it's completely embedded into the business with support from the CMO.
That's great. And, you know, Diana, you had mentioned in your experiences that your work with the analysts in your business unit has become very important. Love for you to share about how that became important, you know, to HP.
Sure. So in the software business group, for those of you who aren't familiar, there are four seemingly disparate businesses that don't make sense. And to an outsider, it looks like it's just a collection of acquisitions. So when George Kadifa came in, that was one of his first priorities, was this is more than just a collection of stuff. But it really is the underpinning between and underneath and across all of HP for just what we really do. And when Meg talks about the four strategic pillars, it really is anchored in software. So we began a process of 12 to 18 months where we worked with our core analysts and then built concentric circles around to meet with analysts who worked in our market adjacencies to get feedback on what they were hearing from our end user clients, what we were trying to message, and they actually helped us get to a point where just a couple months ago at our user conference, HP Discover, we announced Haven, which is our big data analytics platform. And without that kind of back and forth over the course of 12 months and really working with a set of analysts that we work with every day and a broader set, I'm not sure that we could have gotten to a very clean, crisp message.
You know, we'll touch upon in a few seconds about the importance not only to the organization but also the AR program itself, and a little bit of hint on how this helped, you know, the AR folks on the panel professionally. Before we get there, I wanted to ask Nikki, you shared a wonderful story about when you first came into Polycom and your discovery about seeking what the CEO wanted out of the program. Can you share that with us?
Sure. Yeah, so I joined Polycom about 18 months ago. Came from Cisco, was there for 12 years. And at Cisco, there was a ton of support for the AR team, a lot of budget, huge team, so it was easier to get things done. And what turned me on about Polycom was all the challenge. There was skepticism at the highest ranks, the CEO, the executive, and when there's that skepticism, it trickles down. So what I did was look at my audience, right? The then CEO was a salesperson. He grew up through sales. So knowing your, you know, marketing 101, know your audience. So pulled the lever of sales assist. I could have done messaging, right? So ensuring there's a crisp message, but he would have said, oh, who cares about that, right? Or I could have done the executive coaching to begin with, which we have now, and I could have done that. But instead, I pulled the sales lever, and we built a program to engage the analyst and the with top critical accounts and to show immediate impact. We did a few pilots, and the rest is history.
That's great. And Eric, you know, to sort of cement the view of importance on the research side, is having the ability to coach important to the analysts? Is it something that they like to do?
They love it. you know, in fact, the analyst community, and for those that sort of follow the organization of Gartner, I mean, there's a pretty sizable part of the Gartner research organization who wake up every morning and really just worry about how they're going to help the providers thrive and grow. And so for those guys, clearly every day their life's work is to help coach providers on all the research that we do so they can do better competitively. For the analyst community that wake up most mornings and worry about how to provide advice to the end user community in particular, those guys are also perfect coaches as well, because their focus tends to be on what are clients telling me every day. And that's wonderful research and insight to come back to and build into, okay, Mr. Provider, how does this translate into what you need to do? And so from that perspective, the provider community are a huge critical part. It's not just lip service, a huge critical part of our client base, and therefore doing a good job and really owning your space, because all analysts really want to do is own a space. And when they own a space, in order to own any space, they have to own the ecosystem of vendors in that space. And so you have to know every vendor. And you know, whether you work for the TSP organization or supporting end users, you're really incented, and certainly there's a source of pride and good work in where you're able to coach an end user as equally as you are coaching an executive at a vendor. So that's certainly their life's work.
That's great. You know, one of the things that is important to dive into a little bit is the risks involved there and how we get there. So, Diana, I wanted you to share with us your thoughts on how did you go through the journey of feeling comfortable to share what one might describe as some warts with the analyst, right? Taking that risk, because it is a risk.
Yeah.
And then have Eric comment on how do the analysts help in that regard? Because it does take risk. You put yourself out there in order to get that coaching. So love your thoughts on that.
It honestly comes down to building that relationship with each analyst. And you can't judge an analyst by inquiry, interactions, meetings at events like these, or SaaS days. You've really got to take the time to learn what the analyst's own objectives are, because they're not writing research for the sake of writing research, and you also have to meet your business goals. And if you can have those align as best as you can, where you know this is what my business needs and this is the right analyst, and you've had enough of the conversations, it's like getting to know a friend. You will start to know based on your own dialogue whether or not that analyst is someone that you can trust, who will give you honest feedback. But you also have to understand, are your executives open to hearing that kind of feedback? And if they're not, then you need to rethink the right analysts so that you get that right mixture.
Yeah, and we'll talk in a second about overcoming executive resistance as well as picking the right analysts. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Eric, your point of view on this topic about what is it that the analyst can do to help AR feel comfortable to work early, right, in the product development cycle, as a great example, where it's sometimes tough to get the, you know, the developers to open the kimono and feel comfortable about sharing early stage.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, tale of two kinds of providers. I mean, they're certainly the provider that looks at Gartner primarily as somebody they want to influence and spin and only write good things about them, and not necessarily as the coach. And then there's obviously the ones that Diana talked about, where we have probably deeper relationships as clients as well as folks we can coach, where they're not afraid and they don't automatically have that defense mechanism set up where they're not going to tell us about what's ailing their businesses. We understand. I mean, clearly when an analyst is involved, either in a SaaS or an involved inquiry, We definitely feel sometimes there's a reluctance to tell us, well, because you're going to hold it against us, maybe, and and God forbid you write about it. But the reality is that everything we do, every relationship we have, is bounded by a very, very strong sense of confidentiality. The integrity that analysts have and are schooled on and are certified on every year is just scratching the surface. I mean, the fact is that if we started to break any of that trust with any of you, you'd be the first ones to call us on it, and we wouldn't be in business very long either. So, you know, the analysts themselves need to be in a position to feel comfortable allowing your executives to feel comfortable sharing warts and all, because that's the only way we're going to be able to coach you effectively on what we think is best for your company.
And Jude, I love your comments on what I think was a fabulous attribute in your program, which was aligning your objectives as an AR professional with actually with the business.
Yes. And it wasn't easy, but we're really proud of it. And what we did is we had it, you know, as you guys touched on, you have to get close to your clients within the business, and you need to understand what their pain points are and where you can help them. And you have to figure out the things you could bring to the table effectively, and then say, okay, why don't you get some skin in the game with me here? Because this isn't about the AR program doing well. This isn't about me doing well in a magic quadrant. It's about the business doing well, or the business doing well in another initiative. So what we were able to do is to get our executives to commit not only to support it, but to measure it and to put it in their scorecards. And that was, I have to tell you, that was a moment that I felt supported. And then also it shows the value of the program and how much they trust us as a partner in the business. And to this day, you know, we're measuring through sales, and we're measuring through executive engagement and portfolio.
That's great. And Nikki, you have a similar story with contributions to sales' objectives, right? You've really connected with them, where the AR program is aligned to that. Can you share what your metrics are and how that's aligned to sales?
Sure, yeah. So we have two metrics. When I first came in, there was a lot of count metrics, and they weren't answering the so what. So came in and did an assessment, figure out what was the priority of the business, right, where they were headed, how can AR help drive that. And the two metrics we measure are analyst-influenced opportunity, because it's hard
same.
To... You too?
Same.
Yeah.
Same one.
Well, because it's hard to measure exactly your impact on sales, because sometimes it's a long sales cycle.
Yes.
So you can work on something in July and doesn't close till February, and then your boss will say, okay, so how come you didn't hit this number? But it's because it's a long sales cycle. So it's analyst-influenced opportunities. Mm-hmm. And then net recommend. Are they recommending us in given situations where we want to be recommended, right? So we have a goal by which we need to maintain.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And, you know, I'd love to move to, I think, one of the most important sort of implementation questions. If you think about folks in the audience that might want to add your perspectives, tweak and adjust their program, or for folks that are looking at leveraging the analysts more as coaches, where would they start? You know, Dan, I'd love your thoughts on this. What would you recommend to the audience about, is there a formula?
No, there is no formula. There is no checklist. There is nothing that anyone can hand you to get the job done. And I think the best advice that we can just take to heart and remember as AR professionals is you've got to have conviction in what you are counseling your executives on. You've got to take a stand. I'm not saying to fight for every single strategy, every recommendation you're putting it out there, but if you don't take a stand on something you really believe in, your executive team will look at you and go, I'll roll over you every single time. And then AR doesn't get a seat at the table. You have no input on decisions. You have no input on strategy. You just get kicked for why are we not in the leaders quadrant? Why is my dot not up to the upper right?
Eric, one thing that's really key that you can share is, are all analysts equal? Can all analysts be coaches? And how would you go about selecting the ones that can function as coaches?
Yeah. Well, all analysts come in all shapes and sizes. Some of them are more oblong than others. They all share one thing in common. They all, like I said, want to own their markets, and they all have a certain amount of ego. And so, you know, it depends on how they view their roles. And one of the things that I think is important, as you're thinking about who can be a coach to you, so not necessarily somebody that can spread your message, but who can be a coach to you when you need them. You know, Gartner analysts really come from two basic sources, right, when we hire them. They either come from the technology side, CIOs and, and the ilk of IT managers, and they tend to know what it's like being an end user and have a view of technology from that particular point of view. The other big place where we hire people is from providers like yourself, so typically from marketing and strategy roles, who come in and have done the jobs that you and your executives have done in the past. And so when you're looking at the analyst download of what they can do in terms of what they cover, that's great. You need to understand what they cover. But there's a lot of information, too, in their bio that can tell you and give you some hints about which ones might be better for you when they're trying to coach your company to do some strategic things. And that would be look at their background, look at where they came from, look at what organization they work for within Gartner, for example. In my organization, they tend to, again, spend every day worrying about how to coach the vendor community. And one thing I'll also say is it's probably a good idea, especially if you're newer and trying to get a sense of what analysts are going to be better at this than others, is have a conversation with people like me, the team managers of those analysts, because the team managers are ultimately in charge of resourcing and letting loose a lot of times, especially for SaaS engagements, which analysts are going to help you. But they also know very keenly, and they'll be pretty candid with you about which analysts are going to be the ones that are going to help you for the specific needs you have. And if it means influencing your executives, certainly having that conversation and adding it to your checklist of criteria is going to be a good idea.
Now, there's several stories here where you guys use the analysts as coaches in different areas. There's analysts that you can use for product strategy coaching. How would you coach the analyst, June, to give advice to the sales force? Because they can't affect product strategy, right? You know what I mean? So how do you coach that right. analyst to be able to say, look, you know, these folks can't affect strategy or product differentiation,
right.
but what they can do is message, targeting, you know, proposing, et cetera.
I think what's important always is to know your internal audience and know your external audience. And it's so critical in preparing both sides. And I always say, never let an analyst come in to our organization unprepared. And I always ensure our folks are prepared. And if everyone's prepared going into that and understanding what the objectives are, and as Nikki and Diana said, what's critical is what do we want to get out of this? What is the pain point in the business? Where do we need to be? And what value can you deliver? And then to Eric's point, is find somebody with that skill set. Once you map that up, it's like a perfect marriage. And it comes together. And if it's good, it's going to last. And we've seen it last for years. I have analysts that are engaging for years through three-year strategy, you know, end to end. But you have to do your homework. You have to know your business. You need to know the analysts. And you need to know the value you can deliver. And I always say this to my colleagues is, make sure you deliver it, and when you deliver it flawlessly, because it'll come back to you because they'll be your advocate.
Gotcha. And Nikki, similar experience in sales. What did you look for in analysts that could coach the sales force?
Yeah. So just that, right? The right analyst to speak to the desired result, right? So defining what is the objective, what is the desired end result that the sales team is looking to achieve, whether or not it's a competitive displacement against one of our biggest competitors. And then what is it the customer is trying to achieve, figuring, and then you figure out which analyst you need to tap into to help advise. Or I hold my team accountable to understand the analyst's yep. point of view so yeah. well that we actually provide and review RFPs, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so we don't have to bring the analyst in all the time, and we can respect their time. Yeah. So. That's one example.
And Diana, is there a difference that you noticed in the analysts where you wanted to bring them in with executives that might be a different style?
Yes. So fortunately for me, for my organization, we want executives who are going to just tell it to us straight. They're not going to hurt our feelings, and it's something that I actually coach them to do is, I need you to tell my executives what you told me, only not as nice. It's got to be direct and yeah. give us the antidotes based okay. on 1,200 inquiries that you've had over the last 6 months. This is really what your client base is saying.
To add to that, data-driven, what you said, the 1,200 inquiries, yep. the more you can layer yep. the data to support your assertions, it's not just you, the AR manager, going, temperature check, this is what I think is right, but using all the key nuggets that Gene and Peter talked about. I mean, I have my team read Seeking Alpha, the Gartner transcript, every quarter so we can see if Gartner's business is increasing, decreasing, where it is. And to Gene's point, it's increasing double digits across the three business segments. I bring that to my executives. They're like, oh, gosh, yeah. I better pay attention because they're talking to our customers and our prospects.
Yeah, it's not us delivering. I always say this isn't
me. Yeah, it's data-driven.
This is Gartner.
That's great. So if we begin to wind down here, wrap up, love to get your perspectives with the question of the panel here. Analysts as coaches, is it myth or reality, June? What do you think?
It's a reality, but what we talked about, which is so important, is it doesn't happen overnight. There's no checklist. There's no formula. You have to be really savvy internally and externally. I think there's a great opportunity for AR people right now to drive strategy, and we're seeing it in the businesses we're in. There's a great amount of respect for what we do because we're taking everything that Gartner's able to deliver, all your outstanding analysts and insight, and bring it in. And there's a need for it. I mean, you could see it here in the number of people that are here. But I will say, make sure you know external, make sure you know internal. Know what you're really good at, and as I said before, deliver it flawlessly, and you'll have great advocates in the business.
And knowing which analyst to tap into at what time.
Yes.
Because sometimes, you know, the analyst could be good one day, but the business problem has evolved and changed, so they might not address that pain point the next day. It's kind of like what we were talking about, wine,
yep,
right, and food pairing, you know. Certain wine and certain food's good, but you put it with something else,
yes,
it's horrible.
Yes.
So you have to know which analyst to align with that key business problem.
Yeah. Diana, for you, is it worth the time and effort to cultivate analysts as coaches? Is there the ROI there in your experiences?
For my business group, it has paid off in spades. So absolutely, yes.
And so, Eric, you get the last bottom line here. From the research standpoint, are they more interested in being coaches? And is that something that's visceral part of, the culture of Gartner Research? Is it something that they get up in the morning and say, yeah, I'm happier when I do that, or is it not?
Well, I mean, I'd like to say it's always that, the former, but the fact is, and we'll take Magic Quadrants as an example. Magic Quadrants are a hard thing, because everybody loves talking about Magic Quadrants. It's a hard thing for you guys to do. It's a hard thing for the Gartner analysts to do. Mm-hmm. Nancy, with respect, it's not, you said January, then by March it's published. It's usually like a 6 to 8 month process, as I'm sure you all know.
Always on time, too, right?
And that's lightly. So, what winds up happening, of course, is that there's sometimes so much that goes on where the analysts feel in defense mode, because, everything they do is being attacked, so unless, of course, you're in the upper right-hand quadrant. And when you're not, I think the best relationships occur when the vendor accepts it, but then the analyst winds up playing the coach to say, look, you're in the niche category. Let me help coach you, not to game the Magic Quadrant system, but let me help coach you and your executives about what we think it would take for you to move over time into the position you want to be. And we have numerous examples of that goes on, and the authors of the Magic Quadrants are from all sides of Gartner, and they do that. In fact, it is absolutely a sense of pride when they can help providers themselves move along that journey. It's not going to be overnight, but that's a wonderful example. Plus, there's great examples that I hear every day from many of your companies about whether it's through strategy engagements or forecast engagements, whatever it is. We have too many examples to count about how we've helped providers thrive and grow in your businesses, and we hope to do more in the future.
That's great. Listen, thanks so much, guys. We're right on time. We finished on time. We'll get you out to the cocktail reception. So thanks, you guys.
Thank
great
you.
Job.